Oh, and we started the webinar. Wonderful. Okay, I would like to call this meeting to order and invite everyone to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Ms. Gregory, could you lead us in a roll call of the Planning Commission?
Member McLaren. Member Ramirez.
Here.
Member Smith.
Present. And I believe our other commissioner has joined us.
Thank you. Vice Chair Fullerton.
Here.
Chair Maynard.
Present.
And Member McLaren.
Commissioner McLaren, you're on mute. If you'd like to come off mute in order to confirm.
All right, I am present.
Wonderful. All right, so we'll move then to the public forum. This is the time in the agenda when any member of the public may speak to any item that is not on tonight's agenda. Ms. Gregory, are there any speakers for the public forum tonight?
Would any attendee who wishes to speak on an item that's not on tonight's agenda, please click on the hand raise icon now. No, Chair Maynard, there's no one at this time.
Thank you. With that, we'll close the public forum and move on to amendments or adjustments to tonight's agenda. Director Imhoff, I believe we have one amendment to tonight's agenda where we're switching items B and C. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. We'd like to take item C1 out of order ahead of item B1.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and make that change. Do we need to vote on that or can we go ahead and just confirm that?
I believe you can do that at your discretion, Chair.
Okay, so I agree that we should flip items B and C in the agenda. And with that, are there any feedback from other planning commissioners just to double check if there's any concerns with that change? Okay, yep. We'll go ahead and do that. So now we'll move into an introduction of our newest planning commissioner. Would staff like to start with that or should we just invite Commissioner McLaren to introduce themselves?
Certainly. I'd like to start by welcoming Elrod McLaren as our newest planning commissioner. I got to meet him last week as we did our preparation for this, and I'm really looking forward to working with you, Commissioner McLaren, and welcome. As I shared last week, we have an exciting time ahead with some major projects we'll be working on together.
Commissioner McLaren, would you like to share anything with the commission at this time?
Yeah, thank you, Peter, for that welcome. And there's a lot coming up. I've been doing a lot of reading up on these upcoming projects and our general plan and everything. So it seems very exciting, and I'm looking forward to having an impact on the future development of our city and community. So I'm very excited and happy to be on this commission.
Well, we're excited to have you. Welcome to the commission. With that, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item in our agenda. This is in the administrative agenda, item A1. Ms. Gregory, can you read item A1 into the agenda?
Yes. Item A1 is approval of the Planning Commission minutes of Monday, December 13th, 2021.
Okay. Are there any corrections or comments on these minutes? Okay. Before we go into motions, I'll just note if you're a new planning commissioner, you just go ahead and abstain when we get to the voting on this since you weren't present for the last meeting. And with that, would any commissioners like to make a motion?
I'll move for approval as presented.
Okay. And can I get a second? Okay. I see Commissioner Fullerton giving a second. Okay, wonderful. Ms. Gregory, can you lead us in a roll call vote of the Planning Commission meeting minutes?
Member McLaren.
I abstain.
Member Ramirez.
Aye.
Member Smith.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fullerton?
Aye.
Chair Maynard?
Aye. With that, we'll move on to item C, since we're flipping B and C, which is our public hearing item. And Ms. Gregory, can you go ahead and read item C1 into the meeting minutes?
Okay, item C1, continued public hearing on the proposed Heritage Ridge project and final environmental impact report, EIR, case number 14-049-GPA-VTM-DP.
Wonderful. We're going to be opening the public hearing for the purpose of continuing this item. We'd prefer all public comments to the submitted to be submitted at the continued hearing, because we're not substantially discussing this item tonight. Tonight's action is purely to continue the hearing. However, we can take public comment if you feel that you really want to or need to submit your public comment tonight, such as if you're not available for the next meeting. So with that introduction, would staff like it to say anything about the continuation before we take a motion on continuing this item?
No, Chair. We'd just like to convey our recommendation that we continue this item until the March 28th Planning Commission meeting for hearing at that time.
Okay. And Ms. Gregory, is there any public comment tonight on this item?
Would any attendee who wishes to speak on this item please click on the raise hand icon now? No, Chair Maynard, no one at this time.
Wonderful. Can I have a motion from a planning commissioner on the continuing of this item?
I'll move to continue this item.
All right. Do we have a second? I see the second from Chair Maynard. Oh, yes, Ms.
May I suggest an amendment to the motion to continue the hearing to the March 28th meeting?
Commissioner Smith, do you agree with this amendment?
I accept that amendment.
Okay. And Commissioner Fullerton, as the second, do you concur with this amendment?
Yes.
Okay. With that, we will go ahead and take it for a vote. Ms. Gregory, will you do us a roll call vote on this motion?
Member McLaren?
Aye.
Member Ramirez?
Aye.
Member Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fullerton?
Aye.
Chair Maynard?
Aye. With that, that concludes item C1, and we will move back to item B. Ms. Gregory, can you read item B1 into the record?
Item B1 is discussion action item. The General Plan, Coastal Land Use Plan, 2021 Progress Report.
Wonderful. And I'd like to welcome Ms. Wells and Mr. Newkirk for your presentation.
Good evening, Chair and Planning Commissioners. It's my pleasure to introduce the General Plan Annual Progress Report for 2021. This annual presentation represents the efforts of all the departments at City Hall as we all work on implementing our general plan. So we're just delivering the messages from across the all the departments here. I wanted to highlight that the annual reports are required by state law and submittals are required to the Governor's Office of Planning and Research, or OPR, and then also to the Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD. And those reports are due to the state by April 1st each year. And we are on target to meet that date, starting with your recommendation to the City Council via resolution tonight. And then the City Council will consider the report and your recommendation on March 15th. So it leaves us enough time to make that April 1st deadline. The purpose of the annual progress report, that's to provide really not just the state, but also you, the City Council, and the whole community with the status for implementing the general plan. And we're posting the annual reports on the planning website so that people can refer back to previous annual reports. The the status of what's in the report, really just they review the changes that were made to the general plan via amendments, and it also describes our progress in meeting the goals and implementation actions that are articulated in the general plan. And then really a key component of the annual progress report centers around housing, and it allows the city to demonstrate to the state how well we are meeting our regional housing needs allocation, or RENA, for anybody who just only knows that by its acronym, and that's for affordable housing. The progress report also includes it tracking and reporting of other types of housing construction that occurred over the past year. So we're also required to report that to the state. Before we kind of run you through the highlights of the progress report, I just wanted to know, the same as I did last year, that really accomplished a lot at City Hall in this past year and the year before, despite the pandemic related logistic challenges, like just virtual meetings and working virtually and et cetera, not having access to all the paper. I mean, there's just some tricky things about that. So I think there's a, when we, you know, worked on this report and met with different members of the City Hall team, we just did get that sense of pride in being able to perform at a high level, despite the logistical challenges and in some cases, even, you know, health challenges. So I'll leave that there. I just wanted you to know my perspective on that. And Andy Newkirk, who's senior planner in advanced planning, he'll be presenting the summary tonight, and enjoy.
Thanks, Ann. So as Ann kind of ran through some of this, but just to kind of reemphasize, we do this report annually and we present it to the Planning Commission and City Council. This is a process that's required in state law, requires us to submit the report. And a lot of the different parts of this report are required under various parts of the government code. So we were meeting our obligations under the government code by preparing this report. The full report is attachment 2 to the staff report. It's fairly lengthy, so we won't go over everything in the presentation. We're certainly happy to answer any questions you have about any material within the report or the attachments to that report. So again, the purpose is to provide an update on the general plan to our elected officials, our planning commission, our public, and to the state. In particular, describing the progress towards implementing our general plan, as I think most of you are aware. Each element of our general plan includes implementations at the end of the element. They kind of between like 3 and 7 or so. And so the report, the bulk of the report is actually summarizing how we have implemented those implementation actions over the course of the calendar year. Another big element of this plan is documenting our progress towards meeting our RENA for the planning cycle. So this is 2014 to 2022. So we're getting towards the end of the fifth planning cycle. And then particularly looking at the housing in 2021, kind of based on different metrics, whether they're building permits issued or actual new units that have come online within the calendar year. So we document things in many different ways in this report. So again, this is going to be pretty high level, just pointing out a couple of the implementation actions and what was achieved in 2021. But again, there's a lot more in the report than what you're seeing in the presentation tonight. So one of the things at the start of the report you'll see is a summary of the state of the general plan. And what we mean there is how much have we changed it? What's kind of lingering out there? So there were 2 general plan amendments adopted in 2021. One was a land use change at 5631 Cai Real. That's kind of across from the Goodland Hotel. And then the amendment to allow entertainment and recreation services in the general commercial land use designation. There were 3 general plan amendments initiated. That's a process that goes through a public hearing at City Council. One was to that entertainment and recreation services that was also adopted as an amendment in 2021. Then we also initiated the housing element update, which you will hear much more about in the coming months, and the historic resources amendments, which accompany the historic resources ordinance, and that was considered by Planning Commission in 2021 and currently with City Council. And then there A handful of amendments that have been initiated are in progress, but have not moved forward to the adoption phase. So that includes amendments to CE 2.2, which is stream site protection area policy, land use change to 625 Dar Road, and then land use changes to Shelby and Kenwood. Those are longstanding projects in the planning pipeline. And then an ESHA designation on Heritage Ridge, which will be considered very soon. So that's kind of where the general plan changed or is under consideration for changes in 2021. In terms of the implementation actions, a couple that we wanted to highlight in this presentation. One is Open Space Implementation Action 5, which is a preparation of individual park development and or management plans. So one of the exciting changes at City Hall over the last couple of years is we filled a Parks and Rec manager, which focuses on active park management and development, and an open space manager, which is focused on more of those passive open spaces like Elwood and like Los Carneros. So we've seen a real uptick in the development and updating of active and passive recreational areas within the city. So a couple that we just wanted to highlight tonight is design work for Armitos Park Community Garden. So that would be just north of the new Johnny D. Wallace Park in Old Town. Preparation of a scope of work for a Lake Los Carneros management plan update. We have a management plan for Lake Los Carneros, we're now looking to update that plan. And then a lot of effort at Elwood, both in the Monarch Groves and on the Mesa, to do plan implementation and upgrades throughout that area. And so there's a lot of really cool work being done. And so there will be more to follow on some of those projects in the future. And then there's been a Stowe Grove Park renovation capital improvement plan project has been added in 2021. So looking at quite a few of our open spaces and parks and making improvements to those areas in 2021. The safety element, one of the implementation actions is to participate in the annual oil and gas safety audits at the Elwood Onshore facility. And so that was done in September of 2021. In the summary in the report and also on this slide, we just also highlight some of the other oil and gas infrastructure activities going on in Elwood. So in 2021, there was plugging and abandonment work done on off of the wells of Platform Holly, and then also environmental analysis work done for the PRC 421 decommissioning process, and that's for nearshore oil and gas lease, including the two piers out at Haskell's Beach. And early in 2022, a draft EIR was released by State Lands Commission for that project. So a lot going on in that Elwood oil and gas area in 2021, and more to follow in 2022. For the visual and historic resource elements, one is preparation of an adoption of design guidelines. So the city is not undergoing a comprehensive design guidelines project currently, but we did want to highlight there is an objective design standards project that is underway, and there were three workshops with the design review board in the fall of 2021 for this project, and there'll be more to follow in the coming months to adopt standards that would be applied on a ministerial level to certain qualifying housing projects. And that's kind of a change in the way the state is requiring processing of certain housing projects moving forward. Also in the visual and historic resource element, as I think at least a few of you planning commissioners are well aware, that we have the visual and historic preservation. The implementation action is to establish a committee, but we have an ongoing project that is to establish both that committee and then regulations and procedures for historic and archaeological resource preservation and protection. So that was considered by Planning Commission and 2021, and council began deliberations, and those are ongoing in 2022. Under the transportation element, one of the big items for transportation element implementation is the maintenance and operation of the capital improvement plan. And so that's your kind of typical, your public works projects, and they really span a wide variety of road improvements, bike lanes, sidewalks, street crossings, all kinds of different projects. So currently in the five-year CIP budget, there are 36 projects with a total approximated cost of $240 million, with $108 million unfunded currently. So there's a lot going on there. Just on the slide, we just threw a few images up there. One on the left just highlights some of the many things going on in Old Town. The Old Town sidewalk infill project was recently completed, but there's a lot more going on. Hollister Complete Streets project, the San Jose Creek bike path, southern and middle extent, are in the engineering phase. And then there's also the Equal Road extension, which will connect Fairview and South Kellogg. So a lot going on in Old Town, but a lot of other improvements, including pedestrian crossings at various different intersections and mid-block crossings throughout the city. In the housing element, one thing we wanted to highlight that Planning Commission considered in 2021 and Council approved were different fees for different types of affordable housing impacts. So that relates to HE 2.2B and HE 2.5. So we adopted kind of clear applicable fees for when someone is paying an in-lieu fee instead of building their inclusionary housing requirement on site. And then also for non-residential development to address the increased demand for affordable housing because of the increased employees and uses, commercial or non-residential uses within the city. So those fees were adopted in 2021 and are now in effect. And those fees will go into our affordable housing trust fund, which can be used to facilitate additional affordable housing within the city. One of the big parts of looking at our housing element is monitoring the housing we're getting online. So one way we measure housing in this report is how many new units got final inspection or certificate of occupancy in the calendar year. So there are 40 total units added in 2021. There's a table in the report that lists out exactly where these units are. There's one multiple unit project. It's the Triangle parcel at Hollister Village. And then the additional units were all accessory dwelling units. So we're seeing accessory dwelling units. As you may remember, we changed our accessory dwelling unit regulations in 2018 and 2020. So we've gone through a few rounds of revisions there to address the changes in state law. And we're seeing some ADUs come aboard because of those changes. And I'll note, when we look at the affordability, we look at that a couple different ways. For like Hollister Village, there are deed-restricted units. And then we also, for ADUs, we inquire about rental prices and if during building permit application, and if those units are just based on the expected rent, the state provides an affordability calculator Excel sheet that we can use to determine based on our county and based on the expected rent and the number of bedrooms, what income category those 80 units will fall into. So that's, you see some of those reflected here and in the next table. In terms of reporting to the state, the metric is building permit issuance. So building permit issuance means the start of construction rather than the completion. That's how they look at our how we are meeting our arena numbers. As you can see, we had 18 total units in 2021 received building permit issuances, and those were all accessory dwelling units. And again, those affordability levels are based on the expected rents provided during the application, the building permit application process. As you can see, so when you look at the total overall arena in the fifth cycle, we have met our overall arena. However, we are still deficient in the various income restricted categories, although we have seen units completed in all of those income categories. So a summary of the housing, kind of the housing stats. We had 40 units completed in 2021. We also had about approximately 216 units under construction but not completed. The bulk of those are the Cortona apartments. Some of those have since received at least temporary certificate of occupancy. But those are well underway under construction. And then there are several ADUs under construction in the city currently. And there are about 450 units in the planning process, the bulk of which are Heritage Ridge. And then there, the two other kind of larger projects that are still outstanding are Shelby and Kenwood Village. So some highlights from 2021, we had two general plan amendments and three initiations, a lot going on with our active and passive park plans and implementation. We are well underway on our objective design standards project, the historic preservation ordinance, and establishment of that committee is in hearings with City Council. A lot going on, 36 projects in our 5-year CIP, and those housing fees getting adopted to provide clarity on how we apply AG 2.2 and AG 2.5. So again, that's really high level, just highlighting a few things from the report. We're certainly happy to answer any questions you have about the material we presented or anything else in the report. And our recommendation is that you recommend to the City Council approval of the plan and to submit to OPR and HCD, which would satisfy our obligations under state planning law. So with that, I will turn it to the Planning Commission Chair. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that wonderful presentation. So we'll first go ahead and check in with planning commissioners and see if they have any questions for staff. Commissioner Smith, I see your hand up.
I'm not sure if staff has an update on this point. I was looking at housing element 1.4, which is the mobile home parks item. And I noticed there was a reference to the Rancho mobile home park. And I believe it's that one. I know there. Is that the, I think there's one that recently sold. I think there's some ongoing discussions about how current residents will be impacted, that it's being converted into the condo. So I just didn't know if there was a brief update on that and if the city's involved.
Chair and Commissioner Smith, I can speak to that and give an update. The mobile home park in question that you're referring to, the Rancho La Galita mobile home park, was subdivided, and that subdivision map recorded last year. So the individual units now reside on separate legal lots, and under the terms of a development agreement that the City of Galita entered into with the park owner, I believe some 10 years ago, there will be an opportunity for residents of the park to purchase the lots on which their units reside. There are a number of steps that the development agreement lays out that have to happen before that can occur, including the appraisal of the lots and a report that has to be filed with the California State Department of Real Estate and then distributed to the tenants prior to any offer being made. So at this point, we are still waiting for the park owner to submit that report to the state. There is no specific timeline within which that has to happen. But when that does, we expect in due course that residents will then be afforded their rights under that development agreement. And Ms. Kai may be able to speak in more detail if you have more detailed questions.
I can speak to how the city is involved in this. The city is just supposed to kind of shepherd it along and oversee the process to ensure that the owner is making the offers to the existing tenants under the terms of the development agreement. The development agreement also envisions the city applying for a state grant that may be available for certain income restricted tenants who want to buy their unit. So both efforts are ongoing, and we've been in contact with the tenants as well to kind of give the update as to where we are in the process.
Great, thanks for that update. I know that matter's been long pending, so I just was unsure of its status. And I noticed it because it sort of relates somewhat to housing element 1.3, which is talks about the preservation of affordable housing in the city. And I noticed that, you know, we're at risk of losing some affordable units in the next 5 years. And knowing that there's the potential, there's at least the potential that some tenants, if they're unable to purchase, that the tenants there may also be displaced. So, and then considering those factors and then looking at the RENA analysis, and certainly, you know, in terms of the above moderate, we've really exceeded, in terms of the actual built environment, we've exceeded the numbers there, but there's still such a remaining need on the, you know, extremely low income units. I'm just sort of seeing that all together and how it remains such a pressing issue. So in any case, thanks for that update.
Commissioner Smith, may I offer one more piece of information?
Yes.
In terms of tenants who, for one reason or another, cannot buy, do not buy the units that they're offered, they are allowed to continue to rent at the rate that they're renting. And the rental rate would go up based upon what's allowed under state law for mobile home parks at this point. So it's a CPI increase in any pass-throughs of capital improvements generally. And so so the tenants who cannot buy would be able to stay at the rental rates with the understanding that it would increase in accordance with state law.
And so the ownership would just remain with the...
So it's a complicated, the lots that get sold, and the common areas will be held by an HOA, and then the owner retains ownership of the lots that don't get sold.
Commissioner Smith, do you have any follow-up questions before we...
No, that's helpful, because mobile home, it's not always commonly known, but mobile home parks, and especially in the city of Goleta, we have a lot of mobile home parks in our community, and they're a real critical source of affordable housing. So it's good to hear that there's some protections in place there, because anytime there's changes mm-hmm. with mobile home parks, it can really impact a large group. And in this current, particularly in this current market that we're in, where it's hard enough for anybody, let alone if you're a senior on a fixed income, or you're too disabled to work and receiving Social Security, those protections are really important.
Commissioner Smith, I wanted to come back to your comment and address more broadly the situation of affordable housing and affordable housing units in the city of Goleta. We're going to be hearing more about that in the context of the housing element for sure. But we do now, the Planning and Environmental Review Department now does have a separate affordable housing implementation program that is staffed, and we are actively monitoring the portfolio of affordable units, that is to say deed restricted affordable units within the city. And you're correct, we are perennially at risk of losing units because those units are deed restricted for a term of years. And when that term ends, if nothing else happens, then the affordability restrictions are removed for both for sale and rental units, as the case may be. And just a further note to what Ms. Kai shared, the Rancho La Goleta mobile home park units are not deed restricted, and that is not provided for in the development agreement. So although there are rental protections that assure that rents, as a function of state law, I believe, remain at affordable levels, there's no deed restriction per se once those go into private ownership. So that's kind of a fine point, but we are keenly aware of the challenges right now with respect to availability of housing generally and affordable housing in particular. And that is something which we are going to strive through our housing element and housing element policies, as well as through the review and approval of project proposals against our inclusionary housing requirements to assure the city does what it can to address. But of course, we're up against some pretty big economic forces that are larger than any of us and larger than this one city.
All right, so we'll go
Can I add something?
Sure. So we'll go to Ms. Wells, and then as we wrap this up, just so you know that I see you, we'll go to Commissioner McLaren and then Commissioner Ramirez thereafter. So Ms. Wells.
I just wanted to like kind of add on to what Mr. Imhoff was saying, that our current housing element really does have some strong policies and sub-policies like discouraging closures and conversions and relocation and tenant assistance and ownership opportunities. And it's all to hold on to the whether or not it's designated affordable, to hold on not to just those units, but also to the people in them, or to help them if we're not successful in holding on to the units and the people, relocate them. So having a new division and planning so that we can have one person really focused on this work will really probably deliver something at the end and like add to the assurances that these programs and policies will get implemented. So I wanted to flag that these policies are really important in our housing element. We now have someone that's really concentrating on implementing them.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. All right, let's go ahead to Commissioner McLaren, and then we'll go to Commissioner Ramirez. Commissioner McLaren?
Yeah, so I see these income brackets for affordability, but I don't see any actual numbers that would relate to those brackets or categories. So it's like low to moderate income, but I'm wondering what the actual numbers are and what kind of income would be. Well, I guess two things. One, what are the income brackets that we're saying that is designated, this family, individual, or what have you, needs affordable housing? And then secondly, what are the financial brackets when we say they're low to moderate, or the rent is going to be low, moderate, et cetera? I don't see any numbers for that either.
Well, Andy's probably pulling up a slide. We thought there might be a question about the income, so we have a slide for you.
Well, I can touch on, so the income categories, they're defined in the housing element. So above moderate, and they're defined in state law. So above moderate would be more than 120% adjusted median income. So it's a number for the county, and we can talk about the actual dollar amounts in a moment here. Moderate would be 80% to 120. Lower is under 80%. Low is 50 to 80%. Very low, 30 to 50. Extremely low, less than 30%. So those are the income, the brackets. I can put up this slide again that you saw on slide 11 here. 1 second. So that's kind of how those categories are defined. So it's based on state definitions. In terms of the actual affordability amounts, it varies based on the size of the household. So there's kind of a lot of numbers. We don't have a slide for it in this PowerPoint. We will be touching upon that in more detail in upcoming housing element update workshops, including in front of the Planning Commission. We also, on our housing element update website, we have a frequently asked questions that I believe has that information. So I'm just going to pull that up real quick. If you just bear with me. So in terms of the most recent numbers, in Santa Barbara County, an above moderate income household, which is based on a family of four, so that's the 120 and above category, would be 108,100. The moderate is also 108,100, the high end, and that it has to do with some adjustments based on local prices that I'm not prepared to explain right now. Low income would be household income of 100,050, very low 62,450, and extremely low 37,450. So those are the numbers. They change, they get updated based on the various economic factors pretty frequently. That gives you an idea of where those numbers are right now.
Thank you,
Okay. And do you have numbers for what would be the assumed rents for those categories?
Yeah, so the moderate and above moderate is 2,703. Low would be 2,501. Very low, 1,561. Extremely low, 936.
Okay, and one more question. Is the extremely low units that are being subsidized in any way?
Oftentimes the units we see, and the ADUs are just based on the proposed rents. So sometimes some of these in the table you see for arena calculations, some of these are not subsidized. You'd have to dig into the appendix that are like really big tables to see which are subsidized, which are not. Often when we have like a affordable housing developer build these units, as we see fairly often, they're often subsidized.
Thank
you. Lower income, not as much. You don't see it as much with the moderate income.
Okay.
You have any other questions, Commissioner McLaren?
No, that's all I had.
Okay. We'll go to Commissioner Ramirez.
Yeah, I just had one. Mr. Newkirk, if I'm a resident of Goleta and I don't understand RENA and CEQA and all these other alphabets that are out there, what's one thing that the residents should take from this report? Like, what's one thing that you want to really make sure you emphasize or stand out? And any of your staff can help with that.
I think when you look at just our housing numbers, one is we are not, I guess it's important to understand with RENA, and we always say this, is it's not a mandate to develop, it's a mandate to show accommodation. There are some consequences if we don't provide like any housing, but because we are still deficient in our, very low, moderate, that doesn't, there's not an immediate necessary consequence that we have failed to meet our RENA. We showed our RENA capacity at the beginning of the housing cycle. And so what you'll see in the coming months is kind of that RENA arithmetic. And it's really a key part of that is really doing that upfront process of showing that we have the capacity. We don't always have the ability as a city to build housing, but it's really about providing the opportunities within our community for these units to be built. And we've shown that we have the land and the standards to do that at the beginning of the process. And that's how we got our last housing element certified. So I think that's an important thing to understand is really it's that showing the capacity, which we do at the beginning of the cycle. And this is to monitor how we've done in actually getting those units approved and built.
And just to add to that, Chair Maynard, it's worth emphasizing that we are obligated under state law, and we are committed as a city and as a planning organization to meeting our obligations under state law to zone land to accommodate our share of the regional housing need. So that's a legal obligation. We don't have a choice in the matter, and the housing element update process that is happening now and that will be coming to this planning commission very soon. In fact, I'll be sharing a little bit about that in my update. Will be geared toward making sure that we accommodate our fair share of the need regionally for housing generally and for affordable housing. So that's something that we do and that we are serious about.
Thank you. Nothing more, Chair.
Commissioner Ramirez, you asked about like what are some high points, and I would think it's, for me, it's really the evenness across all the departments in City Hall that working on implementing the general plan and kind of doing it together. Like I said at the beginning, despite working remotely, it seems like we've been really effective at working together. And if you saw that number for how much money we're working on capital improvement projects, and those are projects that help all of you, everybody, all of us, mm-hmm. Traveling through the city and walking and biking and all that other stuff, enjoying parks and open space. And that, I think it was 260 million. Is that right, Andy? somewhere in that ballpark. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we didn't have that zero on there. And I'm saying that because that's like, we're doing some, you know, some vault, we're working out improvements in our city that we've long been desiring and the public's been asking for, and that I think you heard Andy explaining. So that's like a takeaway for me, is just that we're really looking at improving our city and working together to make it happen.
Thank you, Ms. Wells.
Ms. Wells, I have to add to that to say I was very impressed, especially looking at Appendix A, the General Plan Implementation Actions and Program Summary 2021, at how few X's there were in the no action column. Almost everything in the general plan is either underway or completed, and there's very few things we haven't at least tried to tackle yet, and I was really impressed at that, impressed how much that's changed in the last few years too. So I'll have to add to what you just said there. I did have a follow-up question for Director Imhoff and Mr. Newkirk, who were talking about kind of our responsibility with RENA. And I wanted to ask how much that's shifting, because I know there was some talk, you know, traditionally it's always been about, we just have to zone it, we don't have to build it. And then there was talk recently with all the changes that were happening at the statewide level of potentially having additional penalties if the projects weren't actually getting built. And I'm curious, like, how that has evolved. Are we seeing anything new on that? And are we coming up to any of those penalties moving forward?
Chair, I can address that initially, and then Mr. Newkirk or Ms. Wells, feel free to add. Mr. Newkirk is correct that the city has no obligation to, we're not in the business of building housing, we're in the business of laying the groundwork, of setting the table, if you will, for private housing developers to build housing. However, the city is obligated under recent state law, under SB 35 in particular, to make sure that the construction of housing keeps pace, or rather, if we don't keep pace with our RENA, then there are consequences that essentially remove our discretion over certain types of projects. And there are two categories based on how we're doing with our low and very low and affordable housing that will, in the limiting case, streamline the permitting process and take away our discretion over certain kinds of housing projects. We are not there yet. We're kind of in a middle category. So we are actually doing pretty well keeping pace, but we're very aware of SB 35 and what it requires of us. And again, Mr. Newkirk or Ms. Wells, feel free to add.
Yeah, I'll definitely add on to that the all of our housing cycles, so the state gives us, you know, a certain number of years that we plan for our housing cycles. And the everything up until this upcoming housing cycle that starts in 2023, we've had vacant land that was zoned residential. So we could do the arithmetic on the acreage and the density minus the constraints and, you know, go through that process and demonstrate that we have the sites that the state wants us to plan for. So it'll be trickier this upcoming cycle because, well, the state, you know, when you build it or the developers build it and they get occupied, we now have to look somewhere else. So if we didn't build anything, we'd still have that vacant land. So it's kind of ironic, right? But we want the housing, we need the housing. Mm-hmm. And so we're building it now, we're gonna have to, we're gonna do the math a little differently this time. So than we have in the past. And that's what we'll be workshopping with you. That's why we have a ton of stakeholder meetings to really like look through our inventory and what we can and what we can do realistically and report to the state. Mm-hmm. So you are right to note that there's, you know, changes at the state level. And then there's also, it'll be a new experience for the city as we do the RENA math differently.
Yeah, and to get maybe in the weeds too much, but just to add to what Mr. Imhoff was saying about the kind of the category we're in the category we are where we don't see a lot of streamlined projects is because we're meeting our overall RENA for the cycle, so that we have that zero in that bottom right corner of that slide. So we're in good shape meeting the overall housing that we were tasked with for the fifth cycle. You get into much more streamlining if you're not on pace to meet your overall RENA. And because we're not on pace to meet our lower income categories, there's a potential for streamlining, but there's a lot of requirements that would need to be met in terms of the overall affordability of a project. But that's why we're in the category we are, is because we are meeting our overall RENA in the fifth cycle.
When does that, I know, like, in the very low or in the extremely low, we haven't been very successful in building. How much would we have to shift our practices to avoid those streamlining triggers that you just referenced?
Well, there's kind of really three categories. One where you're meeting all of your categories, and then there's no real SB 35 consequences. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'd have to get a lot more. I mean, we're almost through the housing cycle. So you look at kind of wherever we're short in any one of those categories. I mean, there's only, you know, one more year of reporting really in this housing cycle. So it would have to be a pretty big change. You know, we have an inclusionary housing policy, but, you know, it's overall 20% and it's broken up by income category. So like for you know, very low, extremely low, we're looking at, I'd have to look again, but, you know, 5 to 7.5%, something like that, of the overall housing of a project. So just even our inclusionary policy, it'd be, if that was met on every project, it would still be really hard to meet those numbers. Again, another plug for the housing element update. These are things we're going to be thinking about, is how do we, beyond our inclusionary policy, how do we support affordable housing development with, you know, folks like People Self-Help and the County Housing Authority, because those projects offer deliver a much higher percentage of affordable housing than we would get through simply applying our inclusionary policy.
And just to give you an even more specific idea, Chair and Commissioners, so in the category we're in, projects that deliver 50% or greater affordable projects would be subjected to a streamlined ministerial approval process, because we're in that category where we haven't made sufficient progress toward the very low and low income housing. There are many other jurisdictions in the state who are behind in all categories, and then projects that propose as little as 10% or greater affordable units are subjected to that same streamlined ministerial approval process. But because we're broadly keeping pace overall with our numbers and in the above moderate income categories, we don't trigger that streamlining provision for projects of smaller amounts of affordability. So as Mr. Newkirk said, I mean, we're doing our best, and I think the state recognizes, and SB 35 is structured in a way that recognizes that it is difficult through inclusionary housing alone to meet your low and very low housing targets, but we are striving to do that.
And Chair and Commissioner, yeah. So we did, in this current housing cycle, we did the regional housing need allocation math and reported on it pretty close to what the number, the RENA expectation was, or requirement mandate was for us. And then the laws recently changed. And so we'll be doing a larger inventory for the next housing element, larger than what's expected. That way, if, you know, one falls short, we can show that we still overall are meeting the land use potential. We didn't, we didn't think to do that in this housing cycle because we didn't have to. And they, you know, changed the rules along the way. So now we know for this upcoming housing cycle, and we're working on that, and we'll talk about that at the upcoming workshop.
Commissioner Fullerton, did you have any questions?
No, actually my questions were answered.
Okay. Are there any other questions from planning commissioners? Ms. Gregory, do we have any public comment on this agenda item?
Would any attendees who wish to speak on this item please click on the raise hand icon now? And the chair made it, no, I do not see anyone at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Gregory. All right, are there any other comments from staff or other items that staff would like to raise?
No, we're just looking for a motion to bring to the city council.
Okay, wonderful. So we'll go ahead and hear a motion at this point. Any commissioners like to make a motion tonight?
Give me one second.
All right. Thanks, Commissioner Ramirez.
Just wanted to get it ready. So I make a motion that we adopt resolution number 22-, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending to the City Council approval of the General Plan Coastal Land Use Plan 2021 Progress Report for submittal to the Governor's Office of Planning and Research and California's Department of Housing and Community Development.
Can I get a second? Okay. Commissioner Fullerton makes the second. Ms. Gregory, can you take us on a roll call vote of the Planning Commission?
Member McLaren?
Commissioner McLaren, if you can come off mute.
Oh, aye.
Member Ramirez?
Aye.
Member Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fullerton?
Aye.
Chair Maynard?
Aye. With that, the motion passes unanimously, and we will move on to the director's report. Director Imhoff, would you go ahead?
Yes, thank you, Chair Maynard. Want to give you a window ahead into some upcoming events. Beginning with this Saturday, March 5th, from 11 to 4, the city will be celebrating its 20th anniversary as a city, with a big celebration at Rancho La Patera and Stowe House, and all are invited to attend. There'll be a range of different events and speakers and food and music. So we invite you all to be there at Stowe House this Saturday, 11 to 4. Then as you heard, per the action you took this evening, we'll be back on on March 14th, first, we have our first housing element workshop. So our next Planning Commission meeting will be our first workshop on the housing element update. And we're looking forward to getting into even more detail on the housing law requirements and how we will be meeting them and hearing from you and members of the public on that. Then on March 28th, per your action this evening, we'll be back with the Heritage Ridge Project continued from this evening. We're looking ahead to a busy spring of housing element work and work on a variety of different projects. One thing that's coming up that I wanted to alert you to early, the Planning and Environmental Review Department is currently developing its annual work program for the next fiscal year, 22-23, and we will be presenting that to the City Council at a workshop that's currently scheduled for 10 a.m. on April 14th. That will be circulated in advance. That's a document where we share our work priorities for the upcoming fiscal year and give a window into the work of the department and allow the council and members of the public to weigh in on how we prioritize those work efforts. So that is coming up, and that is all I have by way of a director's report this evening.
Thank you, Director Imhoff. We'll now go to Planning Commission comments. Are there any comments from members of the Planning Commission? I see one from Commissioner Ramirez.
Yes, Chair Maynard, members of the Commission. Just wondering if there's ever going to be a time where we're in person or willingness, at the very least. If not anytime soon, I will not bring it up anymore. I'd love to be in the same room as you so that we can, you know, have some of these, you know, robust conversations, especially when it comes to some of the important topics that are going to come before us over the next few weeks and months. That is all.
Chair and Commissioner Ramirez, I do not have an answer on that yet. I know the city is reevaluating its policy in light of recent changes in state and county guidance. We're also making some renovations to the council chambers where the Planning Commission regularly meets to upgrade our audiovisual systems to allow for a combination of remote participation and in-person participation. So I hope we will have news on that soon, but I do not have an announcement yet.
I will just thank Commissioner Ramirez for raising the question. I know this is something that's evolving, but I really do appreciate the conversation around it. So thank you for that. And also, Director Imhoff, that's really exciting that you're considering more hybrid modes. So that's exciting to know that that's the direction the city is going. I see Commissioner McLaren's hand raised.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I agree with the comment brought up by Commissioner Ramirez. I think it would be wonderful to as soon as possible, get meeting in person. Having, like he said, lengthy discussions on these critical topics, which are also kind of obtuse in some ways, is much better facilitated in person. So I just wanted to comment that I also agree with him.
Any other comments from the Planning Commission? Okay. We will now move towards adjournment. Would anybody like to make a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Would anybody like to second?
I'll second.
Okay. Ms. Gregory, could you lead us in a roll call vote of adjournment?
Member McLaren?
Aye.
Member Ramirez?
Aye.
Member Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fullerton?
Aye.
Chair Maynard?
Aye. And with that, we have adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.